Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Marketeers Clubhouse. I'm Jamie Kalon. Today, I've got in some friends of mine out of Quebec, Canada, that have started a really cool clothing company. And I've talked to so many people, younger people, that their dying wish is that they could be in the fashion industry and have their own clothing company. So I've got a couple young clothing companies lined up. And of course, you know, lots of people know I have access to North Face and Oakley and some of these larger companies that are sort of the incumbents in the business. But I think it's really interesting to sit down and chat with these companies that have gone through this cycle of hardship, which it literally is. We're going to become a clothing company. We're going to have to learn how to design. We're going to have to learn all of these technical things. We have to understand fabric. We have to understand all these things. And there is technical training that exists at school with this. But in a lot of instances, some of this stuff is just best done organically. So today I've got my friends from a company, and we're all going to get the name wrong. I was calling it Fohlen. My friend Alex Langevin, my other co-host, calls it Fun. It's a German word, and we'll let Ingrid and Anthony explain where that comes from and sort of what it is in a second. But I've got Ingrid, pardon me, I'm choking on myself here. I've got Ingrid Serwa, which I think I just got right. Thank you. And perfect. Anthony Boranowski, and I got that one right, because I'm terrible with names, in today. So Ingrid and Anthony, welcome. Thanks for coming in. I'm really excited to chat with you guys about your clothing company. If anybody is interested in going and looking at it right now, I believe it can be found at Wear Fun, FOEHN.com. So if you guys are listening right now and you want to understand the product that these two are producing, go take a peek at it there. And I'll say that name again in the back, and we'll post it on, if you're watching this, it'll be in the links and on the screen. But welcome, guys. Thank you for coming in. I am really excited. Ingrid, I know we had a connection through Oakley from many, many years ago. And you were running in the Oakley world, and you've had a bunch of different life changes. And then the next thing I know, you've got this amazing, super cool little clothing company. If you guys both don't mind, just give me a little bit of your background. Again, I'd love you guys to talk from sort of the point of view of, if you're talking to a 15-year-old kid who loves fashion and wants to start a brand, how did you guys get, like, what brought you to that decision? Because there's a whole bunch of life things that brought you to the insane decision that you wanted to get into the fashion and apparel business. And God bless you, because that's the business I love. But what got you guys there? And, you know, Anthony, why don't you go first? I can see Ingrid dying to go. Anthony is sitting there stoic.
Sure. Right. I think basically, I come from a background of action sport, and I was a professional skier for many years. Around the time that my career was ending, I transitioned to becoming a designer, clothing for Lululemon. So that was my first real foundational job after I transitioned out of being an athlete. Following that, I went to work for Armada Skis. So initially as running the men's program, and then eventually running the soft goods category. And then following that, I was freelancing for a while and designing for multiple companies. And then we started Fohlen. So it was a step-by-step progression. And if you're speaking to someone who's young, who's interested in doing it, I think it's the idea is not everything at once. And just building those foundational blocks as you go, and really finding great mentors to help pass you along and show you the path. So that would be sort of my feedback, is that you can't do it all in one shot, and to learn and get paid to learn on someone else's dime for a while. That would be, you know, the big thought I would have, you know. So
yeah. That's always the best. If someone could pay you to learn, that's the ticket, kids. When you were being a professional skier, were you doing like, were you studying design at the same time? How did you have the skill set to go in and go directly into like a, like at Lulu, which you did as your next job? Did did you go in with that skill set already, or how did that how did that come about?
No, so I had started a small little company while I was skiing, making accessories sort of on the side, just fun stuff. And eventually, like, skiing's over, you know, you're not going to ski anymore. You're not on the level. So I had, I took 2 years and I completely treated it as if it was a job, but I was not getting paid. Like, so I would learn every day. I would work every day. And I just kept working like that for 2 years until I got a break. So essentially, like, working for free for friends' companies, for other small companies, for anything I could do, I basically did it. Like, I took it on. So that, yeah, no, I was starting from zero.
Self-taught.
Self-taught.
Yeah. It's just trying to be an autodidact and just, like, learn on his own, because I was there to see the process of Anthony. He was like, I want to become a designer, because we were friends back then. And then I was like, you just need to go to school. And then he's like, there's tons of school in Quebec for fashion. You can do it. And he was like, no, man, I'm going to learn by myself. And he really have that strength, I would say, to learn himself and just be dedicated. And just like, we were going to his house in Vancouver and he was waking up at 5, no job. He was like sewing, learning. And I saw it like evolve, and everyone thought he was crazy. And he's too humble to say it. So that's why I'm jumping in, because he would not tell that side, which is very interesting to see people to believe so much into something and put so much hard work and passion into it to really just make it and slowly making it. But I think it's important to say that the school for kids, it's like there's a, of course, school is the fast track or give you more credit faster, maybe, but it doesn't necessarily propulse you where you want to go. So I think it's beautiful that Anthony took that step to do it, quit skiing, not trying to still be relevant in skiing. When you're done, you can still, it's in you, you benefit from it, but then you need to move on. And I think he did a beautiful transition to that. So
yeah, that's an interesting thing. And I'm 100% a firm believer. I have like the worst education. I've got like, I did barely got through high school. And then I was doing, wanted to do some mountain bike convention and stuff. And so I went back to university. And when I really wanted to try, I was pretty good at physics and stuff like that. But I got like 3/4 of a physics, you know, like degree, which I'll never, ever use any of it. Well, that's not true. I use it all the time, but not in practical physics work. But the but everything I do, like all of our companies, like we are not classically trained at marketing. I'm not classically trained at science, at any of these things. And I'm a real solid believer that the less, if you have a human that comes in with a huge amount of drive and the humility that they understand that they know nothing, that is probably the deadliest person that you could put into that situation. They will be the most effective. And there's a couple things that go with that, is the not knowing what the rules for making patterns, for designing mountain bike, for whatever the thing is that you're going to do. You don't know where the barriers are. So you end up actually discovering cool new things along your path, and stuff that people look at and go, well, that won't work. And then you go and do it. And it's like, well, it worked. Like, and, right. And yeah, like it's like, well, basic physics or, you know, standard design, you know, pathology can be broken. And that's like, Elon Musk says it, you know, said it a bunch of times. He's like, I'll pay people not to go to university. Like it's a waste. Just if you're really smart, come and start working for me and we will make you an amazing life. And, you know, I don't necessarily believe that's really good for a lot of people. I think a lot of people need structure, but that highly driven human really highly driven, which most athletes that get to a high level are, because, you know, skiing is insane and, you know, it's a crazy pastime. You're not going to become a millionaire skiing, but, and you, there's a high possibility that your life's at risk at all sorts of points in this. It's just a dangerous thing, but that high drive and that humility to just be like, okay, now I'm going to go buy a sewing machine and start sewing stuff together. I'm going to make accessories. I'm going to do this and that. One of the episodes that precedes this is one of my very good friends, Lyndon Cormack, and the two Cormack brothers are the founders of Herschel. And they were athletes, ski pro patrol. They were involved in fashion. They were reps. And they were just like, no, it's time for us to actually go and make something that's killer. And we see a huge hole in the marketplace for this bag style product and just gone off to the races. And they were cutting and sewing and making stuff and forming relationships at factories. And they were uneducated. They had industry education, but there was no formal education on what they were doing. They'd never done that
before. Or a vision. Mostly also sometimes it's sometimes a vision.
Yeah, and I think that's huge. It's probably, well, to me, it's the number one thing. Like, I would assume you guys envisioned where you guys will be going, like, along the way. We're going to build a thing that is beautiful and functional, and we'll get into the product in a bit. But that vision is super important in everything. So, Ingrid, give everyone a little bit of a backstory sort of where you came from, what your classical training is, what you were doing at Oakley, what you sort of, you know, how you've ebbed and flowed through life.
Yeah, I'm going to try to make it simple because I did a lot of different things.
There's nothing simple about you, Ingrid. So
no, maybe that's what it is, but I'm going to try to make it short and sweet. So I was listening to your podcast, Jamie, this week, and I was like, oh my God, Jamie, you have like all those people that comes and they're all from like sports background and live the outdoor. And I was like, oh my God, I'm the opposite of that. I'm like a city girl who learned to be sports when I started to. I was always passionate about snowboard. I think it's very important. I'm not a skier. I was a snowboarder. And it's pretty much my snowboarding passion that led me through my whole career or path in life. But I never was like, my parents were not skier or anything. We didn't have like mountain bike. We didn't do like whatever, like all those things that all the action sports were doing. I was just snowboarding and I fell in love with it. And it actually started from there, and I ended up to do an intern at Salomon in France because that was my dream. I was like, okay, I want to work in the sports industry. I love that sport. So I went, I did an intern there for a year, and then I live in France, and then I come back, and then I was like obsessed for working for Burton. And I was like, my next goal will be working for Burton in Innsbruck in Austria. So that was it. I got passionate about Europe. And then I was like, okay, what can I do to get there? And then I was like, if I want to get there, I need experience. And if I want to have experience, I need to work hard and just learn as fast as I can. So that was my very goal. And it leads like pretty far when I started like that. And then I was like, what can I do? So I went to work in advertising, worked so much that I was like over it. I was like, okay, this is too much work, not enough passion. You're having not that much respect. And then it's just not in the path I wanted to go. But I knew by working in advertising, you touch many things. You're creative. You learn how to write text, to correct, to put images, to brief properly. Like it's actually what helped me to structure my brain because I was all over the place before. And working in an advertising agency, it gave me structure, how to talk to people, what's the overall, what's the goal, what's the objective, how we get there, what are the tactic, the strategy, go get the people you need. Like, you know, it's like in an agency, but you have an agency, so you know what it is, but there's an expert in everything that you can leverage. So I went to get there. And then I was still looking for a job. And then I found that job at Oakley, which was like a PR role, which I was absolutely not a PR person. And then I was like, Well, and I didn't want to work in Canada for a distributor or like any like rep or whatever. I was like, I need to work for the headquarters. So if I want to apply for Burton, I have legit things. And then in Canada, the only one back then, I was like, oh yeah, that's cool. There's that job at Oakley. I had no idea about PR, but I'm going to apply. So then I apply and I met your friend and one of my great mentor, which is Pierre Martin, who really, I think we had a work crush on each other. It's like, because he was like, I want that girl, but she's talking about marketing. And then I was like, oh, I'm perfect for that job. And then he was like, well, I have a job, but it's nothing to do with marketing. It's just a PR position. And I'm not sure if you're interested. And then we just talked, and I didn't have the background for PR, but at the end of the day, what he understood, it's like, if you have the drive and you want to learn, you're going to get there. And he was there to help me if I had questions. So it was a very junior job at that time. So I took the path, and I end up still in my head to go to Burton one day. It was still there. And then Pierre actually proposed, like, I wasn't sure because at that time I thought that Oakley was not cool enough, which I'm completely wrong because these days, and I often talk to Anthony about it, it's where I am right now is mostly from the people I work with. And it's in big part of Oakley who brought that to me. And every day I'm thankful of that for, and I see a lot of things from what I learned from Oakley applying to Fern every day. It's crazy. And when I hear like all the podcasts you did, I was like, oh my God, there's so much similarities with Oakley and Fern, which is like one is very big and one starts. Like, so it have nothing to do in common, but a lot of the thinking behind comes from there. So anyway, so I end up to work with Pierre at Oakley. I did women's marketing. So involving a little bit of everything. So I was doing PR. Pierre got me the chance, and that's what triggered me with Pierre. He was like, if you work for Oakley, you'll have the best network in the whole world. If you work in PR for Oakley, not sure if you're going to like it, but I can guarantee you're going to have an amazing contact list of people. So I jumped in and I tried and I worked hard and I worked as passionate as I could. And it gave me tons of, I never got specific in one thing. So I did a bit of sports marketing, a bit of PR, a bit of event, a bit of that. And then I think it's like what happened. It's like at some point, Jose, which is another mentor of me who gave me many, many good opportunity in my life. She decided to throw me in the not hotspot, but a very hard position, which was to integrate the PR and communication department in Luxottica with Oakley, which was a disaster. So they threw me there. They threw me there, like knowing, which is interesting because I think Jose knew I could be good enough with the Italian to respect them and be in the US, and I could navigate like both world without, well, it was not always easy, but it got easier. So I got there, I moved for, EMEA, so it's Europe, Middle East, and Africa. So they moved me there for 4 years, and I work with an amazing team there, which I'm so... And then I switched to Olaf, to another guy, which is Olaf Duns. And then he really helped me as much as Pierre or Jose to go, and they gave me many opportunities every time. You know, it's like I started with PR, I end up with the cycling initiative, and then they asked me to do some events on top of that. It's just it was the same routine. I think I got like, maybe because I never say no, maybe because people can approach me and I never say no. Yeah. I'm getting better at that.
Never say no.
I get better at that, but like people could come and say like, you know, and that's what Pierre was always saying. It's like, I'm always here. If you need help, like I'm here. So I could just go and drive alone, and if I had questions, I knew I had the team behind to help me. So I did a bit of everything at marketing for Oakley in 9 years I was there. So, and then I quit. I came back to live in Quebec. I was a mom, so I quit Oakley saying I would be back. So I said to my boss, Olaf, I was like, hey, I'm coming back. Like, he was like, he's the one who noticed that I was pregnant, and he was very bummed about it. So he was like, I would like to talk to you. And I was like, oh my God, what did I do? You know? And then it's like, what is he going to do with me? And then he asked me, he's like, I have a question. Are you pregnant? And I was like, oh yes. How did you? So he understood that. And then I was like, but it doesn't matter. I'll be back after, you know, I'm going to do a year. I'm going to go back to Canada and then I'm going to come back either like in Europe or in Milan or in the US. We'll see. And he was like, you're just never going to come back. And then I was like, what are you saying? And then he was like, well, you're just about to jump in a different life. And then it's just what it's going to be. It's like, it's not that I don't want to work with you, but life will bring you automatically into something else. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, are you crazy? I'm never going to quit my job. I love it too much. And then life just changed. And life changed. And I came back to live in Quebec with my boyfriend at that time, which was JP's best, Anthony's best friend. And he was an Oakley athlete. Yeah. And then it's crazy because Oakley gave me so much that they also brought me my husband and my second husband, because I would have never met JP if I was not at Oakley. I would have, it's all linked. So when I reflect on that, I'm like, oh my God, Oakley is so important to me. It's like, so it was hard to quit. It was very hard. And then like everybody else, I think it's like when you leave Oakley, it takes a while to land on your feet and figure it out. And so JP died in an avalanche as his career. So I end up to be a bit lost in transitioning. So in that year, I lost everything. I came back in a city where I didn't have any friend. I lost my job. I got a mom. And then I was like, oh my God, how am I going to fix this? This is crazy. It's like, and then I met Anthony, but I knew Anthony because he was JP's best friend. So Oakley actually helped me into that transition, because the first time when JP passed, Olaf called me and he was like, we're sending you Julia, which is like, she was doing sports marketing for Europe and she was one of my good friends. So Julia came 2 months to live with me and Oakley flew her to just like be with me. And then after they called me and they were like, you're coming over. So I went back to Zurich for a few months because I didn't have anything to do in Quebec City. So a lot of transition. And then Anthony started to be my boyfriend somehow within that big thing that was going on, because Julia from Oakley left and then Anthony came. And then I spent some time with him because we knew each other so good. And then I went to California for a while with him. And then after we started to be together and I was like, how am I going to do that? It's like, I've been following my boyfriend for work or you've been following me. And then we were like starting that new thing. And I looked at Anthony and I was like, I don't want you to follow me everywhere. And I don't want to follow you everywhere. So we need to be neutral and build something. And he's a designer. So moving in Quebec, I needed my mom at that time. So Anthony moved from California to Quebec City.
A bit different.
Different, a little different.
Yeah.
From like whatever to end up in the suburb of Quebec City, like completely lost, you know? And then I was like, oh my God, what are we going to do? And then this is when I started to be like, we need to start something. It's like, you have the skills, the creativity. I have the structure and I have like a lot of contact. We can make this work. There's no way like it's not going to work, you know, but it's hard, but it's like, and then we just, there was nothing else. Like it was very clear to us that we would start something. And after Oakley, to be honest, I was like, what am I going to do? It's like, I try to work for other stuff and I was so depressed about it. I was like, oh no, this is not what I want to do. This is like, whatever, like what it is. And then it's like, I was, and it's Jose also who helped me to understand that. She was like, it's so hard to come back and find something else and you need to go through it. And then after a while, I was like, well, I don't want to chase something that doesn't exist anymore. So I need to create it for myself and to be happy and to be passionate and create things that product that we just love. It's like that you're stoked to do. And then you're every time you're like, this is it. This is good. This is good quality. We believe in it and let's go. So that was the only way, in my opinion, to make it work.
I didn't know that. I knew a lot of the story, and of course I knew JP. I considered him a friend, although I didn't see him a ton. I got to hang out with him a bit.
Does your brand need some help in the trade marketing department? Manage your sales tools with Regulator's easy-to-use features. Whether it's fixtures or displays, POP, custom art or promo products, you can submit single or bulk orders for all your locations within minutes, using a simple, streamlined process. Deliver content, manage your budget and view the market, all from the palm of your hand. Move up to 10 times faster than your competitors and capture all the opportunities that put your brand on top. Visit brandregulator.com for more information.
It's a really, one, it's a beautiful story that, you know, collectively, both of you lost a best friend. And somehow, through this, what I would consider personal nightmare of losing someone so dear, that some, like, I always see that at these inflection points in life, when things are hit at the bottom, and there's the story of the phoenix, everything hits, the phoenix has to hit the bottom before it, you know, and burn into flames before it comes out as this beautiful thing. And that's the story of the phoenix. And I look at it as inflection points. When you hit the very bottom of whatever it is, and there's nowhere else to go but up, if you got a good partner and you've got someone who's gone through similar stuff, life is a lot easier. So one, it's a beautiful story, and I didn't know the whole story behind that, so thank you for saying that. Props to Olaf, who I've met a few times, for being so sensitive and helping you. That is, like, actually a beautiful thing. Like,
Yeah.
I always have known him to be a very kind and nice man, from stories of, you know, from friends and through Pierre and stuff. But that's actually, like, companies don't generally do that. Hey, we're going to send you your best friend, and here she is. She's on her way. Like, that is the sweetest, nicest move. Like, that's top notch. And truthfully, I don't think a lot of people really understood the culture that existed around the original Oakley. And it was shockingly that there was so many times when people would reach out, like, you know, I had all sorts of weird side companies, and I had, you know, Jose come to me privately and be like, okay, how can I help you? Like, we want you to be successful in this other thing that you're doing. How can I help? And it's a real strange and amazing environment. And then to top that off with a terrible tragedy in your guys' life, but to see out of that this really cool trajectory of how your lives have come out of it. And that's amazing. Like, Anthony, you were in flux. You were an athlete, and then you had to go into the world of business. Ingrid, your world was top, you know, your apple cart was completely turned over. It's unreal that you guys put it back together in such a beautiful way, which is amazing. So kids out there, anybody listening, if your phone isn't working for the day, that's not a real problem. If your car has a flat tire, you got a flat tire on the side of the road, that's not a real problem. Real problems are when your partner in life dies. Your real problems are being alone and being pregnant and not understanding where life is going to take you. But I look at that as like, real metal is forged in fire. Just stuff that isn't like you, you don't become a great athlete without hitting the ground a million times and understanding what hitting the ground a million times. You don't become a great businessman without cratering 100 businesses along the path and not understanding these things. And just general life skills, that's a real thing that I think most people, like, I try not to dog on the generations below us, but there's a fairly soft group of generation of humans below us that their problems and concerns are trivial compared to the problems and concerns of the real world. And people have to get their head around that. And good on you guys for being able to find a real unique and beautiful way to get out of the bottom.
Wait.
Like, to get out of the bottom.
Say, It's but Anthony's been very brave because he jumped in without, maybe it's because we knew each other before, but he, and I remember calling Pierre actually one day, and I was like, Pierre, I have no idea how am I gonna redo all that, you know, it's like I carry like bad luggage behind me, I'm never gonna be able to. And he was like, no, I don't think so. He was like, it's your story and it's fine and you'll be fine and don't see it like that. But I was like, no one's going to want to jump in my life. It's too heavy, you know? And then Anthony just jumped in and he was like, not naive in a bad way, but he was just like maybe believing that we had something good, the two of us, like from knowing each other, from loving each other, from being friend before. So it's actually very cool. So, and that's why that I think Fern could also not arrive, but happens from that. It's because we knew we could complete each other very good. So that was very, very powerful too. But he was very brave. I have some friend who was saying, who knows Anthony and you, JP, who were like, I would have never been brave enough to jump into his shoes, like ever. And then it's like, that's the beauty of Anthony, with like sometimes he have a lot of ego, sometimes he doesn't, and then he's also being able to be vulnerable, and then it's like it's beautiful to, I don't know many guy who would have been able to just do it without, and it's unique, it's special, and as Pierre was saying, it's going to be your story and no one's going to have a story like you, and it's going to be okay. But it takes balls and something you have.
I'm going to guess, Anthony, that from your perspective, it wasn't like you had it figured out and you knew exactly what you were jumping into. You seem like a calculated person and you knew that was the right decision at that time. It looked risky from everyone.
Right decision, sure, but no idea. You know,
well, of course not.
Yeah,
but
dude, right decision, sure. Yeah,
yeah. Like, exactly. How many
following intuition, and you feel good, and you just need to trust the path. You know, at one point, because there's literally it's like starting a business, right? You think you know it, you think you can do it. Us two, we can do it. We're smart enough, but you have no idea what's coming, and you have no idea the challenges and problem solving and like sleepless nights, and you know, you have no idea what's coming. You started businesses, you know what it is. It's insane, like the stuff you endure and go through and troubleshoot and problem solve, and you know, have a good couple months and a good path for it rolls good, and you know. But to summarize, it's like, yeah, for sure, good intuition and good feeling, but no idea of truly what is coming, really.
Yeah, but that's I'm gonna say that you and I hold the similar skill. I hold that skill in the world of bicycles, mountain bikes. Mm. I can literally go into anything blind at about 80 to 90% of whatever my top speed is, and know that I'll figure my way through everything. Mm. In your world of skiing, for you to look at a line and just go like, "Yep," you're making those same decisions. Like there's a part of my ego that exists that when I switch it on, it's so sharp and I think 10 times faster and I think 10 times clearer. And when I get into those spots, it's there's a level of this like unconscious confidence that lets me make decisions really, really quickly. When I'm fooling around on the bike and I'm not in that zone, that's when I fall. That's when I make a mistake. I make a mistake when I'm looking back at the jump that I just did and I'm celebrating and I fall on the ramp, fall off the ramp. Like it's where I make those dumb mistakes. But and most of the businessmen and women that I know that come out of sports have this exact same thing. You have the ability, like the goalie doesn't know he's moving his hand to catch the puck. His hand is moving completely separate from his intellect and everything. It's like a completely different layer. You would possess that same layer, and I would assume you use that exact same level of intuition and precognition on what's happening in these situations, just to be like, no, it's going to be fine. It's going to be a mess, but I'm going to do it. And we'll see exactly where it lays out, whether that's going off a 100-foot cliff or that's diving into the, you know, a new relationship that is already starting off from a kind of a wacky spot. But that's a real special skill. So make sure you claim that. Put it on your LinkedIn. That's the most powerful skill that I think most people have. It's very good. Okay. So, you know, you guys have this really cool story. Let's talk about your company a little bit more and the product and your guys' decision on creating premium high-end technical product, but still actually is fashionably cool. And, you know, from when I look at your website, that's kind of the vibe I get from the whole deal. But can you guys explain your overall positioning of what you want your product to be? And feel free to compare it, you know, between, you know, you guys are basically, I would say, athletic sort of bike, run, and kind of everything in between. Between that, where do you guys put yourself in the market and explain the ethos of your designs?
Anthony, I think you can answer that one. I can.
Me? Yeah. I mean, so I was running last night and I actually was, when I run, I sort of meditate on what we're building and what we're doing. And I have this like mantra when I'm running that I always repeat it to myself and I say mild matter. And it's like a weird mantra, but because sometimes you don't feel like running far and you just need to keep running and keep running and keep running. And it's the same in product design where I'm like wearing my stuff, working on my stuff, thinking about my stuff, meditating on it. And it's like this constant evolution. And to sort of summarize it is like, it comes in at like, I see us as really making like future outdoor, like future performance outdoor. We're always focused on the athlete first. I think we're very honest in our approach of design and aesthetic and what we're creating. I don't think we're trying to be anything that we're not, especially in this moment of outdoor being so trendy and so hot. And so there's so much exposure and interest and people coming to it from the outside, which is great. You know, there's many, many new voices and ideas and things that are happening. But I think at the core, it's like this really pure expression of like functional performance in a garment. So that being said, I don't know. I think it's just clean. It's really approachable. I think about it really is it's like really honest. It's really pure and it's not trying to be anything that it's not. And I'm always trying to solve athletic problems and elevate the experience through eliminating just concerns and making things work better with your body. So
we're trying to do like piece, like for example, we started with like climbing pants and then after we add mountain bike pants, it's like, it's not only doing a sweatshirt or a t-shirt, you know, this will come later on, but it's really, we see like, and we have some pieces that are not as relevant when it comes to performance because they're more like, I wouldn't say performance, but like easier to make. Like a t-shirt is a t-shirt. Like you're not going to reinvent necessarily. You can work with better fabric. You can have a better green story, but there's place in key specific style where we've been doing good, like into clothes that is almost like, I don't know the word in English, but it's almost like a gear. It's part of your gear. Like running short is not just a pair of running a short, you know, it's like you really need to think it through. It's not just a simple thing. Same for mountain bike pants. And there's like really pieces that have a bit more thought or bring more performance, I would say. It's like, if you have a bad pair of running shorts, if you run 80K, you're going to suffer because you're going to be over it. So there's really like that aspect that we're trying to do in apparel, which is like, it's easier to bring more performance in those pieces than just a normal cotton t-shirt. But as you say, we extend, we play from like, we started with climbing And then we had mountain biking. Mountain biking is kind of weird these days, but we still believe, for us, it's the slowest category.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it's like, this is the place where for me, there's the most opportunity, like, because when we do, when we look at what we do, we try to do good modern, like I call it whatever you want, but it's like good modern, like a little bit different than what's going on in the market, with performance and a bit of sustainability. If you put those three things, you should have Fern coming to life. So when we design things, we're asking, is it like Fern DNA? And this also, I think a lot of Oakley, when I listen to those podcasts, are we ticking the box? Are we like ticking the DNA box? Is it like out of the box? Is it like design wise? Is it like Anthony's flavor is in there? So we go through that. So we do those style, and then we make sure they perform good and that they're green enough without sacrificing the other. Like if it's super green, but you have no performance, we won't do it, because it's really the balance of the three that are important into what we're doing. So
it's an interesting balance. You're right. Mountain bike world's a disaster because it's split into about a bajillion different categories. And now there's a whole new group of people that are buying e-bikes and jumping in, and they have no clue what they're doing. Bike stores can't seem to sell apparel, but every time I go out on the trail, well, everyone's wearing apparel and sunglasses, but you can't sell those things in bike stores anymore. It's a real weird market. And the fits are, the human body is such a uniquely shaped thing. It's not the same from person to person. To get stuff to fit and work correctly, ends up creating, definitive picks. Like I fit Fox pants perfectly. Fit me perfect. They never fall down. They're just like, it's the thing that works for me. I've tried lots of others and they're just like, I'm pulling them up in the middle of a ride. It's a disaster. If you're flying down a mountain and unconsciously doing this and you're thinking, why are my pants like halfway down my butt right now? And you're like, okay, this is not ideal. So it just becomes a problem, especially in those high action sort of things. Cycling is difficult. Probably the toughest apparel category because of the weird, like running is a fairly basic motion and you're not sitting on things. You need to do it right, but it's a thing that can be conquered. Yoga, everything needs to be super stretchy. It needs to work, needs to fit tight, can't be baggy. Bikes, you're sitting on things, you're standing, you're like connected to this thing. You're in a weird position, like it's a mess.
Worst of all worlds.
The worst of everything. Golf has its own challenges.
It's almost design engineer. We see it when we designed the mountain bike pants, which was, it's one of our favorite piece. We have some favorite piece, but for some reason, mountain bike for us doesn't work yet, but we don't want to give up on this one because I really see potential. It's like, as you say, it's like you love Fox, you go there because it's your fit and it works. But then there's no other offering than those like inspiration from motocross. And it's like, and you see the kids coming in. And when you go biking, it's actually interesting because the kid don't care about Fox. Like they just want to have a t-shirt and they could even ride in jeans at some point, you know?
It's yeah.
Like, yeah. They're riding in Carhartts and stuff like that. So
yeah,
there's definitely a moment there.
So
yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing, and it's going to continuously be a moving target for you guys, which is crazy. Your green initiatives that you guys are running with your apparel and stuff, and it's a small company, good on you, because the smaller you are, the harder it is to do that effectively. You guys have drilled down very far into trying to make sure that everything is sustainable within reason. It's so easy to kind of just greenwash stuff, but I took a solid look through your guys's green initiative stuff on your website. And I was like, oh, wow, they're actually like looking at transit. And most people, they worry about, child labor, terrible plastic fabrics with you know, microplastics and all these other things. But most people then are like not worrying about how that gets to a store, where you guys have actually sort of looked and tackled that as a component. Do you guys want to sort of give me a bit of a, like that? It's funny because this green component is part of the marketing without a shadow of a doubt. It is in every company. It just is. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's why it's on the website and it's good. But it's not easy as a little company. It's really tough because you guys are on thin margins. You guys are don't have insane distribution that can absorb the costs of this kind of stuff. So as a small ish, because you guys are growing all the time, but as a small ish company, what's your, you know, how did you guys decided to go down that path and make that part of your main sort of marketing message?
Do
you want to answer, Anthony?
Yeah, I mean, very simply, it's I think about what we want to leave behind and what we're proud to create in the world. So at the core, it comes from that, right? It's like, am I going to sacrifice everything to have a better margin and to leave something behind that's a bit icky and I don't feel that proud about, right? Initially, in raw material sourcing, it's easier to decide, okay, I'm going to make the right choice almost all the time or as often as I can, and to hold yourself to that standard and just to make it the baseline. And once you decide to do that, you can have meetings with raw material suppliers, and it goes from there, because there's moments of weakness, like when there's like easy choices, right? When you could just throw it in a poly bag and ship it across the ocean in a plane, and it's cheaper and faster and you just can get it done, right? But I think it really does resonate with our customers and what we're doing in terms of like really making the right choice consistently. And it is marketing, but in a sense, it's not really marketing because it's part of the brand culture and DNA, and it's what is meaningful and what we're creating.
Right. We want to build something we're proud of. So it comes down to that. It's like we started Fern as well for that, because I was like, oh man, it's so bad. It's like, what do I want to wear and why? Can I just be stoked on what I wear? And then it's like every time we design something, we're like, is it like what I want? And then it's part of us to just ask those questions. Is it like, is it good enough? Is it like, we cancel some styles sometimes because it's like, no, this is not good enough. Like we cancel just a pair of pants recently because we're like, and then like our reps are trying it. It's like, I love that pants. And I was like, yeah, I didn't make it. We didn't love it enough, you know? So we, there's a thing about being small, because you say it's very hard. It is harder for a small company to come with product, with margin, and then I have some people at North Face and they come to me and it's like, how did you make that happen? But at the end of the day, it's because we're small that we're able to say we're going to lose some margin on this piece because we believe in it. It's like we did a beautiful jacket that we could have sold 6 times the price and have been telling all my friends, get your hand on that jacket because it's the best down jacket in the whole world. We're losing money, but we also want it to be accessible to people. Like it's a fine line where I think big brands they're more structured, so they need to follow like, okay, that they will look at a product and will say, okay, that product doesn't make margin, it's out, it's automatic. They don't have that flexibility, or since they're not the owner working for it, they're not like, well, maybe we grow that product and we bring it 3 years and we work on the margin and we get there. So when we look at the collection, there's pieces that are very good for margin. There's pieces that we even lose money from the moment we get them out. And it's also okay because we're small. So the quantity is not like, it's not like when North Face is canceling one style, they don't have the fabric to do one style, they lose millions of dollars with one style, but not us. So it's like sometimes we're like, okay, let's leave it because it's just beautiful and we love it and people love it and we want to have people wearing our stuff because it's special. So when I have some friends, because we work in the industry, that comes, it's like, how did you end up to work with that fabric? And we're like, well, that's the beauty of it, because we can say yes to ourselves. And it's like, that's the, and maybe that product is not going to stay in the line like forever, but it's just like, we think of ourselves, like, what do I want to wear when I go cross country skiing? What do I want to wear when I go like eventually like skiing or whatever, you know? It's like, so we're able, I don't know for how long we'll be able to do this, but so far it's like, it's really nice to create product that have like, yeah, we don't make money, but it's awesome to be there and to have people to wear it, you know? So
I think you touched on an interesting thing where it's like, depends on the timeline, the timeline of your vision, right? So are you looking on a, you know, until your next bonus timeline, or until your next like report to your boss? Or are you looking on a 20-year, 25, like what are we actually building here? So I think that's actually something that's interesting too. And it mm-hmm. it's like, what are we really creating? So
from brand development to simple market executions, 54Blue helps brands of all sizes grow with sustainability in mind. Their full-stack range of services include print, fabrication, design, web, interactive, content marketing, brand consulting, creative strategy, and more. Join some of the world's largest brands and lean on 54Blue for your next go-to-market. Visit 54Blue.com for more information.
Yeah, in a long enough timeline, most crazy decisions work their way out and become obvious. And that I'm a firm believer on that. Most people, like when you get into the large brand and the really fast world of fashion, if you're big, you lose your ability to be agile. That's number one. Like, and you guys are obviously super agile. You can look at something and spend, you know, months working on a pant and then just be like, yeah, no, didn't make it. And
exact.
Hits the skids. And there's a beauty in that like small to mid-sized company of that agility to be able to be like, yes, no, real quick. And it instantly is a done thing. There's no committee. There's two people making a decision going, does this look right to you? No, it doesn't look right to me. Okay, it goes in the garbage. Let's move on. Or, you know, not the garbage, but you know, the idea is
good. Yeah.
And I think it's interesting because this ends up being the problem for a lot of companies coming out that are in your size, whether they're just direct to consumer selling their product online, which you guys have a very good online presence. You guys have reps and brick and mortar retail that is firing up now.
We're getting there.
Yeah, you're in both marketplaces. But there's a real interesting crux where the D2C business moves into brick and mortar and everything starts scaling. They start stacking people on. They then lose their agility because you now can't just pull it off the website if the thing sucks. You got to pull it out of retail, which is like a whole other thing. Plus, it's you then business. Are,
yep.
Yeah, you're projecting for multiple markets. Like digital and brick and mortar, and the numbers get way bigger. And there ends up being this like the spot where you guys are right now, which I find super, super interesting. And I've got that software as a platform service regulator, who's the sponsor of this podcast. And we fit in really well with a bunch of companies that are in this size. And it's happening a lot right now where before COVID, through COVID, there was this giant boom of direct consumer, amazing companies. Like I'm talking with a fishing company. I'm talking to about 10 different shoe companies all in the same area. And the product is great. Mm-hmm. And it never really ever hit brick and mortar. It was just this D2C thing that was like going. But there ends up being this really interesting pinch point where that growth happens really quickly because the sales will come. you guys will start filling stores up. The product is really cool. It's simple. The consumer can understand it. It's not one of the big guys. It's something that is like, it's cool. It's not Tentree, which, no offense to Tentree, is just t-shirts and hoodies and kind of like fastish fashion.
Yeah.
It's their purpose. Yours is like this amazing cut and sew, very purposefully built athletic fashion product. And it's going to do really good. The agility is something that I challenge all the companies to keep, because that's the first thing that you lose.
But it's interesting because big company, small brand, and I saw it, like I worked at Oakley. We were looking back then at what Armada was doing. And then we're the small one. We're looking at what the big are doing. And then we see the bigger one doing what we do. Like, it's obvious, you know, it's like, it's always that thing. It's like, if you're big, you're looking for smaller because they're more agile and they can be more creative or put something faster sometimes without like asking the ROI or whatever, you know? So I think it's like interesting to see that when you're small, you look at big, and when you're big, you get inspired by smaller. It's just, it's very fascinating this to see, because I guess it's because you look at what you don't have instead of just like, you know, but.
Jamie, I think your comment's pretty interesting, because as we grow, we've been challenging ourselves to retool our supply chain to be active and to understand what we can do to drive interest and bring people to our website and to continually be have their curiosity touched by us. And how do we, and it's sort of an engineering question, right? Like, where it's easy to design the thing and draw the thing and come up with the first proto, but then how are you going to make it, and how are you going to replicate that cycle over and over while maintaining this bigger piece of your business, which is brick and mortar seasonal sales, right? So that's been, and as we see digital, like customer acquisition costs in digital become so expensive, how are you retooling all these internal systems in your business to create like this sort of beautiful little flow that you have, where you have like, let's call it bigger business, but retail, and that's supported by like small batch stuff that you're driving through direct to consumer, and they all feed each other stuff. And that's a really hard supply chain. Well, at least for us.
Maybe when you're big and you have team behind, it's like different, but
yeah.
I think we came up with very creative way, because we are from D2C at the, like we all, we started D2C. We've been doing it as a project first. We got, I wouldn't say lucky, but lucky, I guess, but it worked very good in the US. Like 80% of our D2C is in the US, which is like very, I don't know if it's from people or Anthony working there or climbing multi, you know, because at the end of the day, climbing in California is 3,600 days a year versus like in Quebec, it's like 20 days. But my point is like, there's more people doing the kind of sports we're doing in California. So we did very good in California D2C. And now we just need to apply that. We want to be omnichannel. So we're getting retail in, but how are we going to feed those D2C interests? Because like, to be there twice a year by just launching Connect Collection is not enough to have them coming all the time, and not because they forget about us. It's like, you do one pair of pants. So now we're really identifying some strategy for our D2C to have them to come back over and over and over.
And yeah. I also, like, did you need a parade every day when you were a kid, or were you just happy to get what you were doing and go do your sports and do things? Like, I feel that, like there's a few brands that I'm on their, well, there's so many brands that I'm on their mailing list for about a day, and I get three things like, tuk, 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 and I'm just like, okay, guys, like, really? Like, I bought one thing from you, and yes, I like your brand. I think it's good, but it's just this like constant thing, to be honest, that I don't believe is sustainable, just as I don't believe year over year, 10% growth is an infinite thing. If it was an infinite thing, there'd be way more trillion-dollar businesses. It's not an infinite thing. It's bullshit. Mm-hmm. And I believe that there's a point where brands, in the brand cycle, as they mature, and the brands will mature and they'll slowly settle into where they live. And if a brand is good, they'll have little bumps along the way that do it. But companies and humans and stuff, we have this like insane thirst for newer, bigger, better, so forth and so on. But this, you know, like much to most people in the world of business, it doesn't work that way. Maybe works that way in the world of oil for the last 100 years, right? Like that, like there's an endless need for oil products. But even at that, some of that stuff's coming to an end and that business is going to change. And, you know, everyone talks about the oil business and it's hilarious. They're like, oil business is going to done. We're not going to pull oil out of the earth. Okay, cool. Where are you going to get the asphalt for your roads? How about the plastic that's in my shirt right now? How about my iPhone, which has a ton of that in it? Like, come on, guys. Oil products are more than just the dinosaurs in the tank of my Mercedes Sprinter van. Like, way different. So, I just feel that, one, I don't know, and I'm questioning a lot of brands on this lately. I don't know if you need to sit there and constantly remind your consumer that you exist. If you're a good brand, they will remember you. And I feel that it's the weak brands that have to pepper their consumers and be like, we're here, we're here, we're here. Hey, do you need another one of these? What's up? Do you need something? Hey, we're just wondering. We're going to throw you a 5% coupon. Like, there's something needy and thirsty about that. It's like awkward. It's like, you know.
I see it more as a, and maybe it's because I didn't express myself, but we get excited because we want to do stuff that we love and just do it for the sake of doing it. So maybe
see, it's that I agree with.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's like more like doing, hey, I want some down fur, like down booties for the winter. Let's make 20 out of it. And then it's, that's it. Or Anthony is doing like a Gore-Tex jacket out of the garage, or like just, yeah. And then it's like something fun and refreshing that, once again, it's the beauty of being small and agile. Like, we're going to sell them. It's like 20. It's almost like doing a sample set. It's just fun, but not garbage. I would just do like really stuff, that sleeping bag, you know, because Anthony came to me once, Jamie. He was like, hey, man, we could do sleeping bag. I found the best Dow factory in the world for doing sleeping bag. And then I was like, well, maybe not now, but the idea is great. It's like, if you can just do a beautiful sleeping bag just for the sake of doing a beautiful sleeping bag, I think it's cool. So maybe you're right. It's not about like just being top of mind, but it's just to have great idea to just put in the world. It's basically.
Yeah, I love the idea. And I brought this up to some of the very high up people at Oakley, where it's like, guys, just like build an amazing thing and make 20 of them. And sell them for $3,000 a piece. Who cares? Like, actually, like, that's cool. I would want one of those 20 things if I could get it.
And that's actually,
that's what makes the brand super cool. Like, there's a reason, like, there's articles, you can Google it, that the fashion industry is obsessed with the over the top from Oakley stuff. They're still obsessed with it. 20 years later, they're just like, that is like, they're obsessed with it. And why are they obsessed with it? It's scarce because they went into the market. Oakley pulled a bunch of them back. So scarcity is an important thing. It's super unique and it's ridiculous, of course.
Ridiculous, yes.
But like, I think that there's, I think most companies just sort of manage stuff. They don't let their brand breathe. They don't like, no company wants to make 20 of anything and put it into the market if like, but that's actually the wrong approach, in my opinion. I think Nike should do 20 of something and they will go crazy. You know, like, I think that's a real thing. Wu-Tang Clan pressed one album, put it in a box, sold it to some ridiculous dude for millions of dollars or $1 million. And it was like all over the news forever, made them way more relevant, far past their expiration date as like actual super relevant artist at in you know, sort of the ether. That logic works really, really well. I love it. And that's one of the cool things with being agile. You could make 20 pairs of something crazy and just be like, we're going to make 20. And just like, it'll go up, they'll be limited. Super dope.
And if it doesn't work, it doesn't matter.
you have 20 of them.
Yeah. Exactly. You're going to make it work. It's like, we did that thing. It's like, we did that beautiful down parka in Dyneema. They sold out like in 1 second. Because the idea is kind of crazy to put the most robust textile in the world with like down, which is so fragile, and you just combine them together. It's like so special. And we sold it and everyone talks about it. We had so many. I work with the a PR, but I work with Diane, which, you know, for PR, she was doing our PR in the US. She was like, I'm going to have it everywhere. And she did it. Like, everyone was talking about it. And then it's great. I think it's also inspiring. You start a business to be able to do these things, to be passionate about these things. And it comes back to the idea we design for ourselves too. You know, it's like, what do I want to wear? What I love? Why? So I think it's that a bit too.
I love it. I don't ask this question often because usually I'm dealing with large brands and people that work within them. But where do you guys want this to go? Do you guys want this to be something that's controllable by the two of you and have a beautiful business that supports your life, gives you an amazing place to put your energy in? Are you... Like, everyone wants to reach, the outside perspective is everyone wants to reach insane scale. Everyone wants to get exactly to where in this world, North Face or whatever is. Where does your, like, I've had this conversation a bunch. Yeah, I've had this conversation before you do it with my wife a bunch lately. I separate dreams and fantasies out separately. Dreams are something that are actually attainable that I can do, that I will work towards and I can happen. Fantasies have unicorns and like crazy stuff, you know, trillions of dollars worth of wealth and stuff. These are all fantasies and those are beautiful things to have, but they are like the outside perimeter of dreams. So in this, I'd love to know what your dream is, but I would also love to know what the fantasy end of this looks like, because I don't know if I would know the answer to that question.
There's a boring answer and there's like a dream answer. So which one do you want to have first?
I'll take the dream. I'm a dreamer. Give me the dreams.
But we started Fern to be able to work for a company for a long time and be working for someone, not someone, for a project that we believe in, that we get inspired. So the goal here in that dream is just to build something beautiful that you're proud of, that you can work for a very long time. So that's, for me, it's very simple. You know, it's like, if I can be my... And not that I don't want to work with other people, it's not that, but sometimes I got like some boss in my life that created actually my most inspiring, like if you don't necessarily get along sometime with some people, it forced you to go somewhere else or go get something else. And then I would like to just stay with Fern and work for Fern forever and still work with an amazing team, but still having project that I see and I want to put in place instead of always having someone to tell you what you should do and how you should do it. So it's very, you're your own boss in a way, Jamie too. So it's like, you do it because it's okay to have people to tell you no, but if it's your, so that's for me, that was the dream, is like to be able to build something you're proud, that do good, that people love, that can wear, that respect the world, that give back to his community, that allow us to do the most beautiful thing we love in the world. It's skiing, snowboarding, whatever the sports, because at the end of the day, we want to be a multi-sports brand. But we've been talking with investor and we learned a lot when it comes to building brands. So there's a thing which like a guy told me and it really stayed with me, because we have a lot of friends who started brand as well. So we've been hearing many good advice from, and it's beautiful to see also all those entrepreneurs who started brand to help you. It's like interesting when you start to do something, you can call some people and have advice, because they've been through it and they know it's hard. So they really are willing to support. So we went through a little small round of investment. And at some point we were talking about what, where we want to go and stuff. And then what I realized, it's like to the cash flow thing, when you do close, is the hardest thing of all. It's not making product that is hard. It's not to have people to know your product. It's really to manage that cash flow. So finance for us is like the big thing where we need to have people with us knowing what they're doing, knowing the market, the economy and everything. So, and then one of the investors at some point, he was like, okay, so what are we doing? For how long are we going to keep that? And like, what is it? And then at the end of the day, he was like, when you reach to a a certain amount of business a year, there is no bank who supports you. There is no investor who's going to jump in at this stage. So you just get bought, you know? So that's the not romantic dream. It's like you just build naturally to build something beautiful and you want to keep it. And it's like such a romantic thing. And at the end of the day, you just don't have the capacity to finance it on its own. So this is when people buy you. It's like very simple. And then it doesn't need to be like an Oakley. They got very big to get bought. Like, but in the apparel world, you get bought much before you get there. So it's like, I wish I can just hold it and have it for the rest of my life. But if it goes good from the tragic, and we don't want to grow like crazy because I really believe in small is good. But if you're doing small is good and you have good product, I think a good example is, not that I'm a big fan of what they do, but it's interesting to look at Peak Performance, Swedish company, do over and over the same thing, good product, like it or not, because I think they're very... their consumer is very, it's not very broad.
Defined.
Yeah, exactly. It's not very broad, but they did good design, good product for over and over, still small, and they sold because it's people comes to you when you're attractive in a way from
profitable
these things and profitable and small. Yep. And so my goal would be like to keep Fern forever and having my son, like we joke about that because like our son is an amazing machine on a bike, Jamie. So now he's like, I'm going to be your first athlete, mom. Like I'm going to be a Fern athlete and I'm going to do YouTube video and I'm going to manage that and I'm going to help you guys. And then it's beautiful. But like by the time he gets there, but we'll probably still have Fern, but it's going to be on the border to transition because we're going to, it's just a money thing. It's not because, or not, or maybe no one's going to want us either, but I doubt it for when I look at the plan and stuff, I'm like, maybe not, you know, but the goal
someone's going to want to buy you. There's zero doubt.
No, it's, but it's like, as much as I would say no, but it's just, I seen it in the industry. We seen it with friends. It's just the natural path of doing that. But at the core, when we started Fern, it's to be able to work together, work on some things we're passionate that can, we just want to have a good salary, not a good salary. We just want to have something cool that we love that pays good and be inspired and hire. We have the list of people we want to hire already.
Yeah, it's great. Like,
I just can't wait to make money to go get that. I can't say the name because the employer will be like, leave them alone, you know? But it's like, I know exactly who are we going to go get, you know? And then it's like, so I think that's the dream. Anthony, would you add anything else?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the dream would just be to build the next generation of designer and entrepreneur and thinkers. And I think that's like one of the biggest dreams for me is to pass along knowledge and mentorship and that kind of thing. I think building a healthy business along the way is absolutely the dream, you know? And I think being able to dictate my own future is like one of the biggest dreams for me. That being said, easier said than done, you know, and
we'll see.
I do think that's my dream, really. It's not necessarily to build a monster or multinational money making churning machine, but something just great, you know.
We're not here for the high rollers, snooty wine critics, or long-haul collectors, but we do think it's about time wine cellars turned into swoon-worthy works of art. Our experienced designers will bring your dream wine cellar to life, fitting any sized space and aesthetic requirements in your home. Our craftsmen carefully hand-build your cellar to give you a wine storage space that really feels like you. Visit themoderncellar.com for more information.
And I love that. I think so many people, and myself included, I've got caught in the trap of like, okay, I'll sell at this point. And you pick a number and you're like, whoa, that's a real long way away. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
But the reality is there's a few things that I've found is that I've stopped chasing like happiness and these things. It doesn't really help me. What I chase is being productive, because every time I'm productive, very surprisingly, I am at my happiest. And that is like whether I'm being productive in my relationship with my wife, being productive in my businesses, being productive as an athlete, when I'm producing, that's PS why I'm never going to retire, because I'm happiest when I produce. And whether it's the businesses I'm in now, or some new thing I'm doing, or the tree farm that I'm putting at my ranch, or whatever it is, I'm happiest when I'm producing. And it's not the production is what is generating the happiness. That's when I'm fulfilled. I sleep amazing. And, you know, like you said it, Anthony, you meditate when you run. There's one spot that I've been able to actually get into a meditative spot in my entire life. And it's when I'm climbing up a bike, up a mountain, and I'm in that zone for about 40 minutes. Then I can actually get into a brief period, about 15, 20 minutes in there. I can focus down and get very, very in this meditative state where I don't even remember huge sections of what I did. And I'm just in this completely different other process, but that it's all happening within this high productive zone. Right. And so to me, I think that's one of the biggest things that I think you guys are doing. Like, you guys are producing, you're producing an amazing life. You've got a really cool company. You have a really clear vision of what you want your product to be, and you're just working through it. And I think most people honestly just mess up by trying to like scale to an insane level that just makes them miserable. And I don't like, I guess it comes down to how you qualify what a success is. Like, and that is the most important thing I think most people miss. Cause if you're doing it from the external, hell, I'm not successful enough. Like if we just looked at my bank account, or we looked at whatever strife I'm going through, well, no, I'm not. But from my side, I can set, like, that doesn't matter what I perceive other people thinking of my success. It's literally just what I do, or what you guys believe is the success of your product, which one makes your designs better, makes your company better, makes everything better, because you produce something with such passion where you're like, we fully believe this is the best pen. Try it. It's a great pen. Try. And it's the belief and the passion in that production that does it. And thankfully it generates money and it lets you guys build this cool thing. So for, you know, that's why when people, younger kids come to me and they're like, I want to start a t-shirt company. I'm like, cool. Why don't you do a cut and sew company? Like, t-shirts are like, it's a thing. And I get it. We all need them. I'm wearing one. We all have t-shirts. However, there's no innovation. There's no massive production. Like, you're selling vapor. You're not making something and inventing a new thing and bringing it to the planet. You're just putting a screen on a t-shirt, which again, completely has its own place. There's tons of giant companies built on that. God love them. However, they're not adding to, and it's the adding to that is important.
It's so hard to see those t-shirt company goes. We have that discussion so many times, Jamie.
Yeah.
It's like when we see like kids like talking about a brand and then they just print a t-shirt and it becomes big and they have their own store and stuff like that. But it's not what we want to do. And then it's, as you say, we want to produce it you do things for being proud of. And I'm sure those guys are proud. Like, that's not what I'm saying. They're for sure proud. Like, the kids that we see starting business at 17 years old, like, we have 17 years old. My godson, what is it? God, like, if I'm the godmother of someone, my godson is like, Ingrid, I have, like, my friend, he started a business. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you started a business. That's great. Like, tell me about it. And then it's like, the guy is just printing t-shirts and he's like having millions of followers. Like, it's like, and then you're like, what am I doing? Like, we're doing all this design and all those things for like nothing. No one cares. And this guy is just printing t-shirts and he's killing it. Sometimes we find it very hard. But at the same time, is as you say, and Anthony also said in his own way, it's like, you want to have a profitable business that is healthy and is going, and it doesn't matter the size of it. You know, it's just beautiful brands that are small, and it's awesome. You just need the exact.
I think it's interesting too. It's like there's like a Rick Rubin quote. I can't remember exactly, but he's saying like, it's like success is defined when you release something into the world and you're happy about it. And it's like, often I feel that in our business, like when I release a product and I can look at it and be like, okay, that's really special. It's kind of enough for me sometimes, you know, like some are going to hit, some are going to flop. I honestly wish I knew, because I'd only do the hits, but I don't, you know? So it's like, I just try to keep creating. And as you said, it's like, you're doing the plus, like you're creating the next generation of thought and evolution in a certain article or shape or solution or whatever it is. And it's like, if you just put it out there, it can be enough, you know? And if it's great and you believe in it and, you know, you've done your time and you've really invested, it's like, I don't know how much more you can ask.
Yeah. And I think that's important. And like, again, to the small t-shirt companies that are out there, there's zero wrong with it. I think it's actually a beautiful thing, but there's an interesting thing that I've always believed in. It works through sport, and Muhammad Ali has sort of got some quotes around this, but like doing stuff in public and finding success is a reasonably easy-ish thing to do, but to get to an incredibly high level of skill or whatever this is, all the hard work is, you know, and Muhammad Ali's quote is basically all the hard work's done on the back roads while you're running in the dark gyms where you are far away from anybody seeing what you do. And a t-shirt company you can just build in public. It's easy. It's not like you do your designs and you get them out. It's not really a super dramatically hard thing. The real hard work is like all the stuff where you're doing it in a, you know, in your own head in this very dark place, screaming into the void, which if anyone doesn't understand owning your own business and trying to sell stuff, basically you're standing on top of a cliff, yelling into a wind as hard as you can, and no one can hear you and no one understands you. And there are people all over just looking at you going, what is that idiot doing? It's you're screaming into a void, and that's what it feels like. And it's so like taxing on your soul, but it's what makes, that's what like forged in steel. You don't know until you scream into the void for a long time. Screaming into the void's like, but that's okay. And I think I really do believe that there's lots of room for not hundreds of millions of dollars worth of companies, but companies that exist in the millions and do amazing and build killer stuff. Not everything has to be a $1 trillion company. God forbid there are smaller companies that make original stuff that service the ample clientele that could purchase it, and people have amazing lives. That's what most of the world exists on, and it's the best. And that's where original things come up. That's where you get discoveries. That's where the new bands come from. That's where that's where all that stuff comes from. Like, not everyone is U2 already at like this ridiculous level at like the end of their career, but still at a ridiculous high point. Not everyone is ever going to see that, but there's so much room for like, how often do you go to a bar or a small venue and see a band that you've never heard of that just blows your brain and you're just like, oh my God, that there's so much of that in the music industry. And there should be so much of that in the apparel and fashion world, where not everything needs to win an award to be deadly or sell zillions of them to be popular. Good is good. And so that's honestly, when I look at your guys' stuff, it's good. I really like it. Like, I think it is really, really clean. It's unique. It doesn't look like everything else. It's not an overcrowded product line. Everything has a purpose. And like, how many times have you gone into an e-com store and you hit the infinite scroll 40 times before you get to the end of whatever you're trying to look at? And you're like, why do I need 6,000 choices of this? Like, I need two. Like, just tell me what's the right one, please, please. So anyways, guys, I love what you're doing. Keep it up. I'd love to come back to you guys at one point. We'll talk in a year or two just to see your brick and mortar world starts treating you. It's a great world. It's a complex world, but it's a great market. And most brands that do great D2C can find an amazing pocket in brick and mortar. And you guys are in the hottest marketplace already, which is California. And then if you guys can really crack your own home marketplace, which is Quebec. Well, you're sitting in the action sports, probably the largest marketplace in North America for action sports is in Quebec. It's huge. And it is fully embraced that lifestyle. And they're very fashion forward and all these things. You guys will crack it. I zero doubt that you guys will.
But that's why we've been not worried that much about that market, because it's going to come. It's going to come the other way, where they're going to hear about it from the US and they're a Canadian brand. And then they'll be like, oh my God, I didn't know. But it's, we'll see. That's what I hope. But we have it takes time. Also, it comes back to like being patient. I think it's like, and we don't want to, a lot of our friend who started brands are like, you need 20 million to start. And then you just need to go, but we're just slower. We're just like, but we have an amazing lineup coming in, bigger collection twice a year. Anthony's been working for, we have 3 collection lineup for so far, almost 4. So
yeah, I'm doing collections on collections right now, so it goes fast. Yeah,
but tons of beautiful stuff. And then it comes back to also what we want to build. Like, I'm always looking at myself and I'm like, if I go like do another sport and I'm like, where is my base layer? Like, I don't have a firm base layer. I need a firm base layer. So we're getting there but as you say, the scrolling, we just want to make, we call it the mountain essential. It doesn't matter what you do. Like, you need your stuff to bike, to ski, to run in the mountain, to cross country, which is the active part. Like, we're not going to call it the cross country collection, but at the end of the day, there's like piece that move.
It all works.
The category, it doesn't. And then not everyone understand that, but it's like, we'll market them like this. And if they don't understand that a layer for skiing can be also for whatever, a windbreaker can be for running or biking. It doesn't need to be only a biking collection or like there's crossover, but we try to do purpose on every piece that we design. I think it comes to that. Does it have a purpose? Is it associated to a sport I'm going to do? Is it like essential? Is it green or whatever? But we have beautiful collection coming in, which is, very excited about it.
Keep being super productive and being happy, because mm-hmm. I can see that you guys are actually happy, which there's not that many super happy business owners out there in the world. So you guys are rare at that. It's hard. But the beauty is in the journey and in the struggle. It's not in getting a giant check at the end. It's not, because mountain biking is 99% uphill if you divide it into time. You spend all of your time suffering. Then you suffer for an hour and a half and you get a 5-minute down. Well, you better figure out how to enjoy the up part, because that's literally most of the time you're doing it. So I always tell people that the fun is in the suffering and finding their way through. So guys, keep being productive, keep suffering, keep building with purpose. I love it, and we'll have you back. Thanks again. You're a wealth of knowledge, and people are going to learn a lot from this. So I really appreciate it. Everybody, you can find them. There'll be links in the description for how to get to their website. And please go visit and buy a couple pieces and support these nice people. Let's do it. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it. Looking forward. And good, Anthony. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.